Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Hello and welcome to a very special Runner's World podcast. Today and tomorrow we'll be at the London Marathon Expo and we're going to be interviewing a variety of people to give you a sense of the rich tapestry that is the London Marathon.
First up we have Harry and Oscar, who are running as a tent and a rhino. So we're going to be talking with them about the Guinness World Record attempts in their costumes. We have Leon and Lloyd, who are taking part in New Balance's Everybody's Race campaign. Paula Shrimpton is joining us to talk about mental health and how running has helped her massively in her recovery from depression. Mr. Tech, Kieran Alger, is joining us in the studio to talk about marathon technology. And Runner's World's own Jane McGuire is here to talk about all her training ahead of her race on Sunday.
Whoa, what a packed schedule. Isn't it a packed schedule?
We better get started.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
All right, well, our first guests this morning are Oscar White and Harry Vowles, two men vying for best dressed runners at this year's London Marathon. One man running in a rhino costume and one man running as a tent. Let's start with you, Harry. Why a rhino and what are some of the challenges of running in this costume?
Well, the rhino just sort of came about. I was running for Save the Rhino charity and it was literally just offered to me on a plate, really. We have one costume left, there's 15 runners, do you fancy doing it? And I was like, I'm never going to get this opportunity to run again, so I have to do it. So I just sort of took the chance and I've trained a couple of times with it in a couple of half marathons and everything, but it is so much heavier. It's 10 kilograms extra in weight. It's really, really hot as well. It's like running in a sauna. So it makes everything so much tougher. But yeah, it's good fun at the same time.
Do you think there's... I mean, the rhino has become quite iconic, I think, as a costume for the marathon. Does that add a bit of pressure to you? Do you feel like you've got
Definitely. I think there's going to be some extra eyes on it as well. I mean, you're not going to miss it as well. It's so easy to spot, isn't it?
Yeah.
And, I mean, I've only trained half marathons in the rhino costume. I've never done a full marathon. So when I get past that halfway point, it's going to be like a man territory for me. So trying to complete the whole thing is going to be really tough.
Yeah.
But hopefully, I'm sure the adrenaline, all the eyes on me, the extra pressure is going to push me over the line.
Yeah. And let's turn our attention now to the tent, because this is a less iconic costume in many ways. Almost a first.
Well, I thought it was a first, but I recently got a message from another tent man.
What?
I know, I was quite surprised. But actually, I'm quite happy because I think it'd be brilliant to get a whole army of tent men running around and supporting each other. And, you know, the more tent man, the merrier, really.
Yeah. I mean, yours is a proper tent, isn't it? I mean, this is a real... You wouldn't want to be stuck behind you.
Yeah, so I'm trying to set the world record, Guinness World Record, for fastest marathon in a tent. And their rules are very strict in that it has to be a commercially available tent. And I've gone for a £20 cheap Decathlon tent, which is a two-man tent. I mean, it weighs 3 kilograms. It's perfect, but yeah, it's pretty bulky.
We had a quick chat about this earlier, and there's actually some things that I hadn't even thought about running in a tent, which is probably the same for running in the rhino outfit. First thing, you can't see your feet at all.
Yeah, I mean, that's one part of it. But the biggest part is the wind.
Right.
And even the slightest wind, which knocks you side to side over a long distance, it just absolutely hammers your ankles.
Right.
And in a recent 16-miler with testing the tent out, my ankles swelled up and I sprained both my ankles just from running in the tent. So we're hoping for kind of still winds in the marathon, yeah.
So Harry, what time do you have to beat as a rhino for the Guinness World Record?
So Guinness World Record, it's sub 5 hours 15. Okay. No one's actually set the record a female called Ellie, who ran for Save the Rhino, has actually completed the female record. But in terms of the male side of things, hasn't been set yet. Right. But there is a Guinness World Record baseline. So sub 5 hours 15 is the time to beat.
Okay.
I think it works out about 7.5 minutes per kilometre to actually do it, which is still quite tough.
How was your, so in terms of how your half marathons, what times were you running then?
So I've done two. I did Wokingham Half, and that came in at 2 hours 16. Okay. And then Vitality Big Half, that came in at 2 hours 19, and that was seriously windy and tough.
Yeah, it was.
But the extra half is going to take me a little bit longer, I think.
Yeah.
Especially it's so busy as well. I think it can take a little bit longer to actually get around people and sort of manoeuvre myself. But hopefully if I keep on track, I should stand a good chance.
Right, so we need to, you know, everyone who's running, keep an eye out for a rhino and get out the way. Yeah, I mean, and in nature, I think that's a wise rule. If you see a rhino, get out the way, but especially on Sunday.
Yeah, agreed. And what about the tent? It's quite a punchy time, isn't it, you've got to go for?
Well, so apparently the world record is currently 4 hours. I've actually struggled to find out who's actually set that, but I would be aiming for closer to 3, so 3:15, 3:30 would be good.
Yeah.
But it's highly dependent on wind and temperature, because it's literally like running in a sauna.
Yeah, well, I think you're both going to get lucky this Sunday, because it's apparently going to be 14 degrees.
Yeah.
It's kind of ideal marathon running. I mean, ideal marathon running if you're running in a vest.
Yeah.
It might be slightly different if you've got a full body costume.
It all seems perfect, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's been like, what, 24 degrees last weekend, isn't it? So I think we couldn't have asked for a better sort of conditions. And
yes,
hopefully no rain, no wind.
Yeah.
It should be okay.
So if people want to find out more about the tent to start off with, where can they go?
So I think if you just type in Tent Man into Google, we should come up first. But so Tent Man is around getting Britain active.
Yep.
And it's actually helping to raise funds for the Outward Bound Trust.
Right.
So they've got a lot of information. And then also a company I run, Bionk.com, which is like Beyond, but with a K.
Yeah,
so
edgy.
Bionk.com, exactly, edgy, which helps people get active outdoors, and it's part of getting people active, has this whole information about Tent Man. So go check that out and try and support if you can.
Great.
It'd be brilliant.
And how about you, Harry? Where can people go to find out more about you? Or the cause that you're raising for, perhaps?
So the cause, obviously, type in Save the Rhino International. They're a fairly iconic charity with London Marathon. And fantastic charity. They're there to protect the 5 species of rhino. 3 critically endangered. 2 have less than 80 in the wild. So they do some fantastic work. So type in Save the Rhino International Charity. It will explain about all the amazing projects they're doing across Africa and Asia. In terms of my challenge, particularly, just type in Guinness World Records. I should be on the homepage. And there should be an article in the video there.
Great.
Amazing.
Harry and Oscar, thank you very, very much for joining us on the Runners World podcast, and best of luck on Sunday.
Yeah, we'll be out there cheering for sure.
Thank you.
Cheers. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
This is the Runners World podcast.
So we are joined now by Paula Shrimpton. Paula, thanks very much for coming on the Runners World podcast. Like many people taking part in London Marathon, you've got an incredible backstory and kind of motivation for taking part, and I wondered if you could just give us a brief overview of kind of why you're running London on Sunday.
So I was a runner as a teenager, school days, early adulthood, joined the Royal Navy, ran for the Royal Navy. I had an incident happen to me in the Royal Navy that I suppressed, and it made me very ill. So a long story short, from about the age of 20 to the age of about 46, very ill with mental health problems that also, and I'm not ashamed to say it because I'm proud of who I am now, ran alongside a serious eating disorder. Mm. I had 5 children in that time and was in a very abusive relationship. Eventually, in my late 40s, I met somebody once I'd got divorced, and my life sort of gradually came together. No apparent reason, I can't tell you what it was, but from about the age of 46, I got well very slowly. And this has been a journey. And, you know, in my 30s, I nearly lost my life. I took a very serious drugs overdose. I was in intensive care for over a week. Yeah. So this is a celebration of being alive.
Yeah.
I'm 50 now. So my 50th year wasn't about reaching 50. This is, I'm alive. My life begins now. So this marathon is going to be very emotional for me, because it's not just about running the 26.2 miles. It's about, I'm alive and I'm living my life. I've missed the whole of my adult life. I want it back now. And it's, running hasn't replaced anything. I was always a runner.
Yes.
It's that I'm now well enough to be able to do the things I always loved. So, yeah, it's been 3 years
slowly getting my health back and combating a lot of things, not just mental health problems.
Yeah. That's an amazing story, Paula. And I think that a lot of people will relate to that in terms of their own personal journeys to that start line. And I think it's amazing that that's the attitude. I think a lot of people treat a marathon as just an easy benchmark that can be sort of ticked off as a bucket list thing. But in fact, the significance of it is actually incredibly important.
Very much so. I'm lucky to be here.
Yeah.
Very lucky to be here. I died when I took the overdose, and they were lucky enough to get me back. And so this is very much a celebration of being here and doing something I love. I love running. It was something I always loved. And to be able to join a running club and make friends again and start to enjoy everything, not just running, but everything. So.
Yeah. You said sort of it's been a 3-year journey of getting well enough to run. What was the first point that you suddenly sort of on that journey? Did you realise there was a significant moment, or did you just sort of suddenly progress into it?
I was lucky enough to move to Spain. We lived in Spain for a while. It was the first time I didn't have to work full time, so I didn't work. So away from people that I knew, people that had always known me as a certain person, and I could actually look after me. So I joined a hiking group in Spain to make friends, and from there I met somebody that belonged to a local running club, and it was all women. Sometimes some men ran with us, but it was a ladies running club. It was trail running, and it was in the mountains, so a lot of it you can't run, you have to walk because you're using your hands. And that was actually a good way to slowly build up to running again. And being away, I know it sounds silly, but being away from friends and family that knew me and had been supportive, it actually gave me real time to look after myself and concentrate on me.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think leaving the country actually helped me. I know that sounds bizarre, but I didn't have to work and I could focus on looking after myself. But was there a magical moment? No, I couldn't tell anybody. I've tried to support another lady, or a young girl actually in her 20s, going through similar things to me. And she'll say, what happened? What did you do? What happened? I can't tell you. Mm. It's just something clicked.
How do you think you'll feel, Paul, when you cross the line on Sunday?
I reckon I'm going to bawl my eyes out. It will not be a pretty picture when I cross the finishing line. There will be no glamorous shots, that's for sure.
Yeah.
It will be very emotional. I will be very happy. I've trained very hard. I got an online running coach to make sure I did it properly.
Oh, nice.
And so I'm waiting for it now. I'm ready. Done the training. Let's do it now. So it's going to be incredible. And I've watched the London Marathon since the first ever race.
Yeah.
Not live, but on the telly. And I watch it from the minute it starts to the minute the coverage finishes, whether it be in bed or on the sofa, but I watch it.
Yeah.
So to actually be able to do it myself is even more special.
Yeah. You mentioned there a little bit about an eating disorder. And there's been an increasing amount of press in the running world about bringing to light eating disorders and some of the messages around that stuff. How did you begin to recover from that? What was there anything? I'm just thinking about the moment in which your life sort of began to turn around, how you overcame something like that.
Okay, so being very open and honest, my eating disorder started at the age of 19 whilst in the Navy, and it was to do with control. I had no control over where I lived, what I wore, even what I said, because there's a hierarchy system. So subconsciously, that's how my brain took control of what I ate. And once you get into part of an eating disorder, it becomes habitual. It was something I did. So, I'm sharing a lot here. Part of my eating disorder was being sick. So when I ate, I was sick after I was eating, and also at one period of time heavily addicted to laxatives. And I got to the point when I left Britain that people had been used to seeing me a certain size, and it's quite frightening to let go. And the battle you have in your head of, are people going to judge me when they say, you look well? So when somebody says to somebody with an eating disorder, you look well, you don't think, thank you very much, that's really kind. You think, oh my God, I look fat. You're saying I've put on weight. That's my interpretation of it. And people that I've known, that's been their interpretation of it. I can't speak for everybody, obviously. But that's what you tend to think. And once I'd gone away from Spain where nobody knew me, it was safe. I felt safe to finally start, and also to realise that if I wanted to go back to doing the things that I enjoyed and my mental health coming back, I had to fuel my body. I couldn't run on what I was doing, and I was beginning to enjoy my life, and I wanted to live a long life. And if I'd tried to do what I was eventually ended up doing, I would have had a heart attack. You know, I just wasn't giving myself enough fuel. And so it's letting go of the fear that people are going to judge you. So now when I came back to Britain, living here, and back to where I used to live, and I see people that I haven't seen for 15, 20 years, because we were in Essex, and we've lived quite a few places, Cambridge, Oxford, etc. And then when I went back to Essex and people say, you look well, it's, yes, I do. Thank you very much.
You know, I do.
That's great. And I do. And they, some people don't double take. It's like, oh, my Lord, you know. And I think it was moving away and thinking it's safe now to change and get well. And also there's, to coin a phrase that is used around eating disorder support groups, I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. I had done it for so long. And I wanted to get my life back. My children had grown up and they've left home, and I wanted to enjoy my life. And I had a wonderful man in my life who supported me. And so it wasn't easy. It took me a good 2 years to break that habit. It wasn't easy.
I think it's a fantastic story of survival, that, and I think that's that will be the message that a lot of people, I think, will take from your running and your story, is actually someone who's getting through it and got through it. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah. I'd like to give somebody a story of hope, that there is hope. I'm living proof that there is hope.
Yeah.
Because in my 30s, when I took my overdose, didn't want to be here. I was convinced the world was better off without me. I had 3 small children at that time. That didn't matter as far as I was concerned. They were all better off without me. I was a burden, etc. And that you can see the other end. There is light at the end of the tunnel, I promise you, if you stick with it. It's frightening. It's very hard to let go of something you've had for a very long time, and it's really scary. But it is all right in the end. It honestly is all right in the end.
Best of luck on Sunday.
Thank you very much for sharing the story with us. Enjoy it. I will do. Thank you. Great. Thanks so much.
Brilliant.
Yeah, what a fantastic last interview with Paula there. It was amazing, wasn't it? Yeah. And I get the sense that the London Marathon is full of those kind of inspiring stories of why people are lacing up their trainers and doing it.
It's just scratching the surface. You've got 40,000 people. I mean, people are racing, people are doing, but there's a whole world of emotive reasons, and it's amazing that Paula's story is, I think, one of those ones that will hopefully encourage, as she said, give hope to many. That would be nice.
Yeah, definitely. This year at the Expo, we've got, for more inspiring stuff, the Inform and Inspire stage, Runner's World Inform and Inspire stage at the Expo. And obviously we've got the Runner's World stage as well. So there's going to be lots of great stories, information and advice. So if you are heading to the Expo, do check it out.
We've got online on the website, there's a list of times and who's talking on the stage. So people giving advice on training and nutrition for the race day, and mental health, and how to get the positive mental attitude for race day. And then on the actual stand itself, we've got information on pacing and all sorts of everything going on with the magazine. So spend lots of time milling around the Expo and come and have a word with us.
This is the Runner's World Podcast.
Okay, so we're here now with Leon Cerrone and Lloyd Kempson. Welcome to the Runner's World Podcast, guys.
Thank you.
So, Leon, you've been on the front cover of Runner's World, actually, so it's quite interesting to have you in the studio now.
Yeah, it was a bit of a weird one, getting to ask to do that, but yeah, once in a lifetime, I think.
No, it's great to have you on.
Still available in shops.
Yeah, absolutely, in all good WH Smiths. How has running improved, not just your physical health, because you're a very good runner, but do you feel like it's made you a kind of happier, healthier runner as well?
Definitely it's helped me mentally. I mean, I'll try and keep it as upbeat as possible. I had quite a rough kind of end to 2017 and start to 2018. So cyclist before kind of running, had a big crash and had to have an operation to kind of almost kind of rebuild my left arm in a way. I kind of smashed it in 6 places quite bad. Oh. And I was in a bit of a bad way mentally, and kind of stumbled upon running and fell in love with it, and here we are now doing doing London. So
was it an instant thing for you? Did you kind of instantly get something out of it?
Pretty much. I mean, I've signed up for a half marathon and thought I'd hate it, and just thought, right, I'll do it, keep myself off the sofa, you know, keep things ticking over. Yeah. And after three or four runs, it just clicked, and I was hooked from that point on, really.
And Lloyd, you've been rapid at shorter distances, and that's been your sort of...
Thank you.
Yeah, well, congratulations. But you, this is your sort of step towards the marathon, right? This is, how's it been going? How's the preparation been going?
Yeah, this is a big step now. Transition from a track runner to the roads. And yeah, I mean, 1 year doing 1500 metres and then the next doing 26.2 miles is quite a big step up, and I think it's shocked a few people, but... I knew that I was always going to go to the longer distances, and I've got plans to go further and further, really. Sort of the slower I get, the further I'm going to go. So I knew that it was always going to get to the 26.
That's an exclusive ultra running is coming.
Yeah.
This is it.
One day.
Was there anything about London in particular that appealed to you? For it being your kind of first marathon, did you want it to be London?
It had to be London. Yeah. Even if I'd have got offered a place overseas for a marathon, I wanted London to be the first one, because I live in London, I'm a London boy, and just being in and around the streets and having the opportunity to run in certain places of the city that you don't get unless you run London Marathon, for me, is just a massive achievement. There's not, even though there's 40,000 people that do it each year, I still don't think that's a lot of people in the world that can say, oh, I've done London Marathon. So
yeah,
I want
sure.
to be one of those.
Yeah.
That's right.
How's the difference in the training been? It's sort of like, what's the average week now look for you? Like, in compared to when you were doing track stuff now to now, how did your body respond to that sort of shift in mileage and stuff like that?
So the actual volume hasn't increased. My weekly mileage has still been 80 to 90 miles a week on a full week. It's just the type of training that's a little bit different. So rather than smashing hard anaerobic sessions and hitting the lactic system, it's all been more tempo-based work and marathon-paced long runs. And just getting into that zone that I'm going to be hitting in the race sooner rather than later. And then in terms of how my body's reacted to it, I have just been tired quite a lot. Yeah. And generally, most runs don't feel great. And then just like Leon said, when he first started his running, it just eventually clicks. And then I think then you realise, I'm in pretty good shape.
So Leon, you also had a spell as a boxer as well, is that right?
I did, yes. Many moons ago, I used to get punched in the face for fun.
what weight were you fighting at?
I was middleweight towards the end of my short career, if you want to call it that. Yeah.
And do you think it's helped you at all in your running to come from that kind of background?
I think definitely it's helped. It's kind of, I don't know what it is about me. I gravitate towards sports that you kind of have to hurt yourself in. Cycling, boxing, running, you kind of have to be able to put yourself in the hurt box, for want of a better word, and it doesn't get much more hurty than getting punched in the face or the rib. So I'm hoping come kind of mile 20 I might be able to hark back to my
I've
times.
Been here before
picking myself up off the canvas and kind of finishing it. So
I'm sure that helps from a kind of mental strength perspective. It's all kind of
definitely
in the same world.
Would you as a sort of this transition into running, is there one thing now that you would tell someone looking to get into running? If you had one bit of key advice that you'd kind of like want to pass on?
Is stick with it. Going back to the first question, and the first few runs, I hated it. It was, you know, it was terrible. Everything was aching. My knees were sore. I was like, I'm done with it. I was going to throw in the towel. And just stick with it, because it will click. You will have that one run and it will be just like, boom, I'm here and I'm enjoying it. So it's, take it easy and stick with it.
Yeah. And Lloyd, you did a bit of running coaching as well, is that right?
Yeah, that's
right. What would your advice be to anyone sort of thinking about taking on the marathon for the first time?
My advice is to, when you first start out, just keep it casual, keep it fun. Find some friends in your local area that go out for running as well. Find a local club and just keep it really social. And then you'll find your own process and you'll find your own way that works for you. And it's not going to be easy. And 90% of your runs are going to be hard and they're going to be tiring.
Yeah.
But when you do experience that runner's high, which you will eventually, then I think you'll realise that it's so addictive that you'll stick at it and you'll keep going and keep going.
Yeah.
And that's the best bit of advice I could give anyone.
Sounds good, yeah.
And as Sunday approaches, how the nerves, how's the excitement? What bit of the day are you most looking forward to?
I was fine until you asked that question.
All right, good.
For me, the preamble, it's like the cool room of a track race. I hate it. Everyone's psyching everyone out. Everyone's looking at each other. But as soon as the gun goes, or as soon as that horn goes, I'm like, okay, we're sweet. All I've got to do is get to the finish now. So as soon as that gun goes, I'm fine. But in the lead up to it, in the morning of the race, I don't really want to talk to anyone.
Well, I guess you both go in for sub three. I think you both do that comfortably. Certainly, well, you, Lloyd.
There you go. Leon, signed off by Rick.
You've done a 1:20 half.
No job done already.
No pressure.
But I'm interested in when you're racing marathons at the level you guys are at. What are you looking for in a shoe? Do you want something that's quite lightweight?
For me, I've been trying to find. I've struggled with some shin splints towards the end of my training, so yeah. I'm trying to find something that's going to get me comfortably through the 26 miles without flaring them up too much. So. I think I've found the shoe that I'm going to run in, so hopefully my shins will hold out for 26 miles and we'll see what time I kind of run in. It's my first one, so it's going to be a whole...
Yeah.
It's a learning curve.
For sure,
and without sounding... It's a process. It's a learning process, yeah. So we'll see.
Yeah, how about you, Lloyd?
For track me, man. I need two things. I need response. I need response from the shoe.
Yep.
I need a lightweight shoe. And then the third thing, which isn't too important for me, I just need something that the way I can explain it is so that I feel like my foot isn't touching the floor. Right. I just need something that feels like a slipper, because I'm a neutral runner and I'm a 4 foot lander and I need something that's quick off the ground. So for me to get through 26 miles, New Balance 1080 is what I'm going to be using.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Fresh foam is just—it's the nuts. It's the best. I think it's the best. And we'll see when I run sub three. Apparently,
you've been part of New Balance's Everybody's Race campaign. How have you found being part of that?
It's completely bonkers, to be honest. You know, it's the closer and closer we've got to the marathon, and we see our faces pop up on tube signage and. People sending us pictures on Instagram of our faces all over the place. It's been it's been a bit of a whirlwind. I mean, it's been amazing for New Balance to ask me to be part of it and us to be part of it. They've got such a heritage in running, you know, with how long they've been around, and their kit's great. So I mean, it's been a real privilege. It's once in a lifetime experience that I'll treasure, you know, and go back to. Maybe show the grandkids. Who knows?
Yeah. Have you found that it being your first? Most people don't get to the start line of their first marathon having seen their face on the tube. Is that like added to the pressure, or is it?
I feel like it's added to the pressure. It's definitely a bit, it's a bit daunting, you know, with the exposure you've had and it being your first one. But hopefully, my nerves will hold out on Sunday.
If it helps, the people we had on before, one of them is running in a rhino costume and the other guy's running as a tent.
Okay.
So it could be worse.
Yeah. I mean, the tent guy's running for 3:15. So.
So if we're flagging...
So I need to beat a tent so we can latch on.
You need to at least beat the tent, Lord.
Okay, right.
How about you, Lord? How have you found being part of New Balance's Everybody's Race campaign?
It's been a whirlwind and a very new experience for me. I've never done anything like this before. I've never really had my photo taken, except maybe my friend's taking a photo.
Yeah.
But... just the support from New Balance has been amazing. Just having them in your corner with, you know, kit and support from, you know, professional coaches and stuff like that has been remarkable. And I remember when we first started out, me and Leon were chatting quite a lot, like just texting and stuff. And it was like, geez, I wonder how this is going to go. Like, how's it going to take off? And then all of a sudden your face is on Oxford Street and it's like, oh my Lord, like it's remarkable. Yeah. And I mean, in terms of the pressure...
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC.
For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Has it added to it? I suppose it has a little bit, but I don't want to kind of just succeed for myself now. I kind of want to represent the brand and nail it for them as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Well, 26.2 miles is a long way.
It's a long way, yeah.
You know, just to add that in.
Fingers crossed we beat the tent.
Got to beat the tent, guys. Got to beat the tent, yeah.
There's loads of fast people dressed as weird things. That's the one thing about London. You'll suddenly find yourself at like a turd emoji. It'll be overtaking you at some point.
I did get beaten by a pencil once in a half marathon, you know. It was quick pencil, but he beat me.
Some of these costumes, though, they're not that different to a vest, are they? You know, like a pencil. What's he really adding?
I saw that. A guy I know has got the world record for the fastest marathon in a superhero costume.
Oh, right, yeah.
And it was basically just a onesie.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It's like a speed suit.
Absolutely. It was literally an all-in-one.
Are you prepared to share on air what time you're hoping for? A goal, Lloyd, what do you think? Ballpark.
Well, my A goal is probably like 2:01. But if I don't hit that, then 2 hours 59:59.
Okay,
so,
right.
So I might be lunging for the line.
How about you, Leon?
I'd be happy with, 2:59:59 first time. But I'm kind of going in there to enjoy the experience as well. Obviously, I've got a goal and I would like to go sub-3. But I'm trying not to put too much pressure on myself to do that in the first one. But who knows what will happen on the day. Yeah.
Well, best of luck on Sunday, guys. Thanks so much for coming
on the
Run as Well.
Thanks for having us. Thank you.
Yeah. Cheers.
Awesome.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Well, we are joined now by Kieran Alger, Scott Kane and Sim Benson, three soothsayers of the running world, here to tell us a little bit more about how they see the future of running. So welcome to the Runner's World podcast, guys. Let's start with you, Kieran, as a kind of tech guru. What is the tech that's currently exciting you right now?
I've just seen a brilliant product. I mean, I'm all about using tech to improve performance and kind of, you know, get the best out of myself. And there's three big questions that a lot of runners ask themselves. One is, am I hydrated? One is, am I fueling right? And the other one is, how do I run as fast as I can without hitting the wall or breaking myself? There's a new sensor that's being developed right now called Sweaty. That's real name. And this is a patch-worn sensor that is basically going to be able to help you answer those three questions. So it uses sweat analysis to tell you if you're hitting your lactate threshold. It'll tell you if your blood glucose levels are reaching levels where you need to refuel, and it'll also be able to spot whether you're hydrated. Now, this is pretty much kind of holy grail stuff for runners. If you think about specifically running a marathon, you know, those are three big problems. So I think this stuff is really exciting, and it's kind of coming soon. We thought it would be a lot longer, but it's inbound, so soon running is going to become a whole lot easier.
As it was a patch.
Yeah.
Right. So is it sweat that it uses to monitor, or moisture, or skin, or how is it like?
It's sweat. So they've worked with Imperial College London to basically do the science on this, and they've sussed out that they can use sweat particles of sweat as a proxy for blood. So you don't need to, you know, the old school way of doing it, a lot of serious runners will know this, you do a lactate test, you do laps around a track, you take blood with a near prick or from the finger, and then you send that off to a lab to be analysed. Yeah. Now you can do this real time using the sweat as a proxy. It's worth saying that this product is still very much in development, and, you know, how the technology actually pans out, how it speaks to your smartphone, and all of those things are yet to be seen. But they've proven the science behind it, and, you know, that's half the battle.
Yeah.
And in terms of, so, marathon, future marathons, this means that you could be training and work out that the gel that you've been having after 5 miles is not crucial, and actually it's the gel at 7 miles is going to be the best.
That's the one.
Right?
Absolutely. Or still, you know, if you look at the London Marathon start line, you'll see a lot of people 15 minutes before taking gels. Now, you know, that have I had enough carbs in the morning? How am I fueled at that point? Do I really need that gel? Or am I just setting off a chain reaction, which means that in 20 minutes' time, I'm going to have to take another one? You're basically going to be able to make smarter decisions about your fueling and hydration. I guess the other thing that a lot of people might do is overhydrate on marathon race day and be drinking too much at water stations and such like, and that can, you know, affect your performance. So any of these things that you can maybe get alerts or alarms that say, you know, now's the time to drink, now's the time to eat, stops you eating too many Haribo is going to be great.
We mentioned water stations there, and I know that London are trialling a sort of new water system for a small amount of runners. Sim, as somebody who's interested in sort of sustainability and the environment, what do you think about that? And do you think, and what are some of the ways that races could become more environmentally friendly?
Yeah, London seem to actually be really trying to get on board with the sustainability. So David Attenborough has put a lot into this, and a lot more people want to be plastic free, and big sort of road races are one of the hardest places to do that. So what London have this year, they've reduced the number of water stations that they normally have, which obviously has a big impact on the number of bottles, the number of sort of drinks that they need. And I think it's from 26 to 19. So there's still a lot. You're not gonna run out. But it does have a big impact. They've got a closed system of recycling in several of the boroughs. So they know how many bottles are there, and they collect them all and recycle them. The Buxton, who are sponsoring it, it's a 50% recycled bottle that they're using, and which are also going to be recycled. LucasAid, for the first time, using 100% recycled plastics in their bottles. And they've also got one aid station that uses compostable cups, which they're composting, and they've got another aid station that's using these. It's like a seaweed gel that makes a bubble of LucasAid, and you get given a bubble, which is like a fairly big mouthful. You put it in your mouth and bite it effectively, and you get this like flow of LucasAid in your mouth, which is a little bit of a weird experience, but actually it works really well, and it does mean there's no waste at all. So yeah, there, which is good because London's massive, so when they do things, the other races get on board and follow on.
Yeah, definitely. So Scott, you're chiefly concerned with how cities themselves and kind of town planning could become more sustainable. I mean, that's what Run Friendly is about, isn't it? Is that right?
Very good question. So Run Friendly is like, we call it like Airbnb for showers. So for people like, I guess, many of the listeners and people here who run a lot, but you might also be considering about, well, could I fit more mileage into my, you know, normal week? Yeah. And therefore, could I consider run commuting, which I personally have done for about 10 years. And Run Friendly was really a sort of observation, which actually you can go and meet your friends, you can go to meetings, you can fit in the run. But actually there's that slightly awkward moment where you try and find a nearby toilet to kind of have a quick splash wash or whatever, and then go to your meeting, and you never feel quite right. So Run Friendly is basically, we've persuaded an enlightened bunch of gyms, hotels, co-working spaces, retailers, some like Decathlon, for example, and they've got showers already. Right. So we're basically saying, we'll help you sweat your assets, nice pun, and it gives people the opportunity to get clean in multiple places across the city.
Question for Kieran and Scott here. Obviously, London is an actual race, so there's going to be real people there on Sunday. But there's obviously the rise of the virtual races. So starting with you, Kieran, what do you think about these virtual races? Can you see a time when they overtake real, you know, kinetic human races?
I think you have to sort of distinguish. So there's some races where you basically sign up and you use a watch or a tracking app to say, I'm going to do 10 kilometres or a marathon, and then they'll send you the medal once you can prove the information. That's one kind of virtual race. I guess the other way is looking at when you're in the sort of virtual reality or something like Zwift, where you're running races on a treadmill or in a fixed position. I think the, you know, the popularity of virtual racing is quite surprising, actually. Yeah, a lot of people are motivated to go out and do these runs on their own. I think it shows that how technology can be a big motivator for people. You know, if you can get somebody who's going to go out and is willing to run on their own, do 26 miles for a medal, I think that's a brilliant thing. Yeah. Will it replace people wanting to turn up and do it when you've got lots of people handing you out Harry Bows and patting you on the back as you run along London? Probably not. But again, there are driving factors here. London, Tokyo, New York, these are vast races that everybody wants to run. And what was it like? World record breaking number of people tried to enter to London in the ballot this year for a small number of places. So how does London give everybody that experience? And that is certainly, while the challenge hasn't been answered yet with VR and those things, there's definitely commercial reason to go and do that. Yeah. And I can see that, you know, in the long distant future where we can wear something virtual reality that doesn't feel horrible to sweat in, in an environment that feels hyper real. Whether you're running on a treadmill or you're going outside, anything that can encourage people to move more is a big bonus. So if you can find a way to make a treadmill run more exciting by watching a visual of you tracking through the streets of London pretending it's the marathon, then I'm all for that.
Yeah.
And I think that's got to be a good thing.
Mm. What about you, Scott? What do you think?
So I would agree on anything that helps people run more is a positive. I would then say it's about what you choose to optimize for. So we were discussing actually just while before we came in. So if you think about mental health and mental well-being, or the flip of that being, you know, happiness, something that we kind of strive towards, there are two main determinants that the science basically suggests that will improve your mental health and well-being, or certainly your self-reported happiness.
Yeah.
And one of those is essentially, we're social animals. So spending time with other people is the single greatest determinant of happiness and well-being. So even if you're an introvert, and even if the people that you're spending time with are strangers, it's still better than spending all of your time alone. Mm. That's what plays out. And so if we think about from an urban context, you know, you can have intense social isolation and loneliness, even though you're surrounded by others. So I would say, and the second one is basically exposure to nature. So even if that's small doses of nature, so you can be moving through, you know, pocket parks and, you know, passing by the river, you know, small bits of river, those kind of things are going to improve your sense of well-being. So I would say I would be cautious in my optimism about too much virtual and extended reality replacing our ability to come together with others. I think that the explosion in things like run tribes, which are slightly distinct from run clubs, are fantastic, and they become much more intensely social things. And I think that's kind of an optimist's view about how we'll extend. I think you could take a slightly more negative view about, well, actually, if you're just going to go and essentially get into a cupboard, you know, cover yourself in sensors, run like Billy-O, and then basically think, well, I beasted that, you know, I did Kipchoge over the first 2 miles. Yeah. I don't know whether that will sustain happiness over a longer term.
I wrote yesterday actually an article that's on runnersworld.com/UK, which is for Earth Day, is related to a study that was published in February, which was to do with children being exposed to green spaces and the direct impact on mental health as an adult. Yeah. So if anyone wants to sort of have a bit more of a look, there's a very interesting study just on the website, which very obvious, sort of makes sound very obvious conclusion, but actually the study, I think done in America, proved that the importance of green space in an urbanized world.
Yeah, and I think just because we know it doesn't mean necessarily that then influences our own choices and behaviours. And so actually the more that can be kind of repeated and sort of revalidated, the better. You know, we were joking about it as well, which is to say, in terms of self-reported happiness, there's this thing called mappiness. It's like happiness, but mapping it geospatially or on a map. And the very worst thing for your happiness is supporting a football team. and the very worst thing of all is supporting a good football team, because you expect them to win. So I'm a Blackburn Rovers fan.
Brilliant.
I'm much more happy than I... You know,
I wonder why you're so happy. He's so jolly, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. Because we're rubbish and I never expect us to win.
Kieran, do you want to jump in and defend technology here?
Of course, yeah, always, yeah. No, I was just going to say, I mean, I think it's fascinating, because virtual reality if you've experienced virtual reality recently, and I know a lot of people probably won't, and I've been lucky to test out a few new setups. One of them was a football simulator that's being used by Premier League football clubs.
Not Blackburn then.
Probably not Blackburn ever. And and one was for cricket, and I was flabbergasted, even as a tech journalist, to come in and see how hyper real the environments were. You were basically, I was sent out onto a cricket pitch in a stadium with a crowd cheering, and Ireland's fastest bowler came out and bowled a couple of overs at me, and the experience was like you were there. The football setup was very similar. Now, VR doesn't lend itself brilliantly to running because there's a bit more of active movement, but in terms of the mind and how you feel in the space, actually we're getting closer to a stage where you can kind of mimic some of that, and it'd be fascinating to see whether that fake environment operates the same way for happiness being in a green space in the real environment. It probably doesn't, but maybe we're going to edge closer to being able to give people access to green spaces who might not actually have had them before. And I think these things are really interesting. VR is definitely coming on to, it's the hyper reality of it is getting impressive.
So Sim, you co-authored Wild Running, so presumably you're in the nature corner here. Would that be right?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I can't really even begin to imagine wanting to plug myself into a computer and run around. Although I would be interested in trying it, but yeah, for me, and I'd argue for anyone if they were honest, if you went somewhere beautiful and went for an amazing run along like a natural feature, like a ridgeline or following a river or anything like that, and without the pressure of a race, just going for a run, I can't imagine anything that any technology could beat that for a sense of happiness.
Yeah.
So I think, I imagine it would be an amazing training aid. And I imagine it could be very good for people where it's in sort of more urban environments where it's harder to get out too often. I can imagine it being good, but I can't imagine it ever being better.
Taking the place, yeah. Right, final question, into the near future now. What are your plans? Start with you, Scott. Running plans 2019. What you got next? What's coming up?
So personally, I'm going to, my most immediate running plan is to try and work out a less toxic air quality route back to the Elephant and Castle. Because having run here, the one I chose, I'm pretty certain wasn't the best one I could have taken. Beyond that, I'm going to try and do three halves under one and a half hours. So okay. I've just done the first one, and I'm now tickling 50. So you know these are going to get harder and harder, I think. So that's my plan. Nothing longer.
Sounds good, Kieran.
I'm going back to a race that I've failed to finish twice for a third bite, called the Lavaredo. It's a 120-kilometer run in the Dolomites, out in Italy, and I'm basically using all of the technology I can to try and help me get to that finish line because I absolutely have to.
Third time lucky.
Yeah, otherwise I'm definitely going into the dark room with a VR. I will never come out.
And Sim, what about you?
Well, in a couple of weeks' time, me and my wife and our kids are going up to Scotland for probably 5 or 6 weeks to go and sort of scope out a load of new trails that we've, a lot of new places we've not been to. So we're gonna go running around the Cairngorms and then go across to the West Coast and get up to Torridon and hopefully get out to some of the small isles like Egg and get out to Mull. Great. So yeah, no races, but loads of exposure.
Great. Scott, Kieran, Sim, thanks very, very much for coming on the Runners World podcast. Interesting to hear more about the future of running. What do you think, Ben? What's going to happen?
Well, I think Kieran's going to hide in a cupboard and everyone else will have a lovely time. No, it sounds great. Thanks so much, guys, for joining us.
Thank you.
This is the Runners World podcast.
Our final guest of our Day One Marathon Special podcast is Runners World's own Jane Maguire.
Yeah. Welcome, Jane.
Thank you.
Hi. Jane, you are set to run on Sunday.
I am.
How are you feeling?
I felt really good until last night. I had a kind of like, which I think everyone will have at some, that noise everyone will have at some point. Yeah. And last night I felt a bit like, oh God. But apart from that, I felt really good.
Right.
Like, training's gone really well. Not injured.
No injuries.
No injuries.
It's been a textbook build-up, actually.
I know. It's been like Perfect.
Touch wood.
Wow, touch wood, touch wood. Where's wood?
What did you put that down to? Have you been like following
so
something?
I have been. The whole idea behind London for me is to train from a watch because I think people, you know, spend a lot of money on a running watch and you don't realize how much a running watch can do. So I've been following a Garmin plan, and at the end of each kind of session, your watch will say, oh, rest for 3 days, rest for 24 hours, 8 hours, whatever. And I've kind of been really following that because I think normally when I'm in a training kind of plan, I'll just do a quick run today, or I'll cycle to work, or I'll kind of not actually properly rest. And I think it has helped that I've never kind of got to. There was one week where I had a kind of niggle in my leg and I missed a couple of sessions and I took a week off to go skiing. But apart from that, I've not, you know, found the plan overwhelming. I've not kind of had moments where I've been like, I just don't want to do it today. I can't do the mileage. So it's kind of worked really well. So shout out to Garmin.
I mean, this is, we wanted to sort of, I'm going to sort of speak on the sort of the grander scheme of it, but as Jane was saying, like, people buy watches and they can cost up to £400.
Oh, easily, yeah.
And the technology in them and what they can do, and you know, there's they can now tell you predicted VO2 maxes and recovery times and all of this sort of functionality. But a large proportion of people we've spoken to about it will buy one because they want to just track a run. So they might want metrics as they're running, but there's never any sort of like afterthought kind of like, oh, interesting.
Yeah, sure.
It's like, oh, I want to know my cadence and I want to know my current pace and kind of set or heart rate or something like that. So yeah, the whole feature, which will be on runnersworld.com/UK when Jane has written it, will all about how training to a watch is a very useful thing to
That's
do.
Interesting. What are you most looking forward to about London? Is there anything that you're dreading?
I don't think I'm dreading anything, actually. I think I feel quite chill about it. And I don't know, this will probably not really appeal to most people listening, but I think because I'm writing about it, I've kind of removed all emotion from it.
Okay.
So at the moment, I'm kind of just like, okay, yeah, I've got to go and do that on Sunday, which I think is really alien to everyone else, I guess, because not many people will be writing about it. But I think I'm not really dreading any of it. I'm kind of, actually, no, I'm probably dreading getting there, because last time I did it, I was very late and they were ringing the bell and it was all very chaotic and stressful. So that was the only thing I'm dreading, that can
logistics
easily,
kind of stuff.
The planning side, I'm not that good at. But actually the run, not really dreading anything. The weather looks good. I've kind of got practice loads of different fueling. So I'm kind of feel, yeah, like, you know,
oh, that's
hopefully,
good.
Hopefully it will all go well. I might feel differently on the morning, I guess. But
I think that the fact that this is marathon number two for you means you've had that initial... Like,
yeah, I've done the kind of terrified, turning up late, running off too quick, getting stitched, getting cramp. I've done all that. So I kind of feel like I've ticked all that kind of off. And I think I'm just kind of... I feel quite like whatever happens will happen. Mm. It'll all be fine. And, you know, let's just kind of see and try and enjoy it. It really annoys me when people say that.
No, I think it's because it's hard, isn't it? You're like, oh yeah, I will try and enjoy it, but I'm still running a marathon, so that's difficult. It's not as if, you know, you're going out for a picnic.
No,
you know, make sure you enjoy it. But I think I wonder if you have done it before. I mean, specifically, what are some of the things that you will change this time?
Slow down at the beginning. I think it's so hard. If when you've been training for something for so long and you get to the start line, you're like, oh my God, I'm here. It's so hard not to kind of get swept up in that awful like wave of people that kind of everyone runs off that line. So definitely chill out, you know, see how I feel. In all my training runs, I've been pretty calm and I've got to kind of 20 miles and felt, okay, this is all right. You know, I can do this. And hopefully I feel like that on the day, to definitely kind of slow down. And I think last time I didn't enjoy it at all. I kind of found it all, I was definitely crying. I found it all very emotional.
Yeah.
You know, all it takes is like a dad to hug their kid and I'm like, gone. But last time I just cried for like 4.5 hours and all the pictures of me, I looked like I'm in pain, and I probably was a bit in pain. But I think maybe the kind of, I think I just went in with the wrong mindset. I went in with, I can't do this, it's going to hurt. And I think if you think that, it will hurt and it will be rubbish and you will hate it and you will get to the finish line and think, no, never want to do it again. So I think this time I'm just going in with, it'll be fine. And, you know, if I enjoy it, you know, hopefully I'll enjoy it. And if I don't, it'll only hurt for a bit and it'll be fine. Everything will be fine. Yeah. So that's kind of my, like, mantra.
I think that sounds good. I think you need to bring that positivity to race day, and even when it gets hard in the race, to keep forcing yourself to be positive is crucial.
Everything will be fine is probably one of the best mantras I've ever heard. There's no great grandeur of like positive. It's just everything will be fine.
I want to be best friends with Kipchoge, and he's always happy and smiling, isn't he?
Yeah.
So he's my, like,
oh yeah. If anyone's going to be the inspiration, is Mr. Kipchoge.
Yeah, like, he's always so, when you see him, he's like, chill, he's happy. So that's, you know, I'm the next Kipchoge. You've had it here first.
Jay Maguire, the new Kipchoge. Yeah. Are you, presumably you're not going for the world record, but are you going for a time?
No, I've all along, because I've been training, that's a really weird thing about the Garmin plan, is it's to time,
right,
not to. So all my runs, you know, have been like run for 3 hours, or, you know, I've kind of had to pick a pace to kind of stick to. But I am I'm again probably really annoying for lots of people who care about time. I can't let myself be that bothered by it.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of like in my head, I know
there's a ballpark,
you know,
sort of.
Yeah, like, oh, that would be cool to run that. But I'm not kind of like, right, I've got to do this and I've got to do this and stick to, you know, get sub 4.
Yeah.
Because I think for me, I've got that kind of personality that would actually ruin all running if I was like, right, every run I have to do this and I have to do that and I have to share my times on Instagram and I have to, like, I just can't get into that.
Yeah.
But fair, that's enough. Great for some people, that really motivates them. But in my head, I kind of know where I want to be, but I guess I'll kind of, on the day,
see what happens. Yeah.
See how I feel.
You have to remove the things that are negative and encourage and like latch on to what's positive. And then that can be social media. It can be a way of training. It can be you know, any form of something that arises when you're doing these like long training stints. You really have to work out what benefits you and what doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think with some people, they use social media like their training diary, and that's totally fine. Like, you know, so allowed. But for me, yeah, I think if I did that, all my friends would be like, you know, right, Han, like, we're going to unfollow you now. Like, you know, it's just like, I'm not an athlete. So I'm kind of a bit like, yeah, I always say you do you, don't I? I'll do me and I'll see what happens. And if it works, great. And if I get across the line in a time that I'm really proud of, then great. But either way, I've run a marathon. Well, hopefully I've run a marathon.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's kind of like.
Well, I think that this is an important part to mention the Runners World Pace team.
Yes.
In particular, the man sat opposite you, Mr. Rick Pearson, who's pacing 3:45 from
your start.
I'm calling
it the Good for Age Garrison.
So,
I mean,
in terms of, it's not to say that, you know, but if you wanted a friendly face to follow during the race.
It's true. You
pacing
might see me like
3:44:59.
Perfect. Equal level splits throughout.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I think you probably could run that, but like say, maybe it puts pressure on you to do that, so
well,
choose where you go.
Like my friend Kipchoge, I've got Berlin coming up September, so I feel like London, see what happens, and then go quick in
Berlin. New target.
Yeah, watch this space.
Yeah. Well, Jane, best of luck on Sunday.
Thank you.
Maybe I'll see you during the race.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I'll just cheer from the sides.
Yeah, well, yeah, I've got contact lenses now. That's been a big game changer.
Oh, great. Yeah.
I can now see, so
Huge difference.
You know, it's great. Everyone listening, if you can't see, get contact lenses, because it's changed my running. Like, I can see people, I can see road signs. It's been amazing. So I will be able to see everyone coming to watch me.
Are you going to be wearing anything distinctive on the day for your family and friends to follow?
All black.
The ninja. Stealth. Yeah. Running ninja.
Stealth
Jane
mode.
Yeah.
Jane, thanks so much. Good luck on Sunday.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Bye.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
So that brings us to the end of this very special issue of the Runner's World podcast. We'll be back again tomorrow with more inspiring stories from across the running world.
Yeah, I mean, today was a good day. Tomorrow it will be even better, I'm sure. But it's just nice to be here and to feel the excitement building.
You're almost kind of feeling the expo from here.
Almost.
Yeah.
Almost the stench of expo.
Thanks very much for listening, and hopefully we'll see you again tomorrow.
Hey.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.